My name is Teresa Healy, and we're all in this together. This is a show exploring practices of solidarity as they are lived and made real by people in Brattleboro, Vermont, and in our listening range. Today, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Becky Graeber. Becky Graeber is director of the Brattleboro Women's Chorus, a group she began 25 years ago. She also directs Anima Terra, a women's chorus in Keene, and leads music at the Second Congregational Church in Londonderry, Vermont. Becky loves living here in Brattleboro with her husband, Tim Ellis, and enjoys visits from her two grown children, Sarah and Jacob. Welcome to you, Becky Graeber.
Thank you so much, Teresa. It's a real pleasure to get to be here with you.
I'm very excited about our conversation today, and I've enjoyed listening to my guests' stories all year long. And I'd like to ask you to tell us a story today, a story about solidarity that is meaningful to you, something that you were engaged in or perhaps extended to other people or another person, or maybe where solidarity was extended to you. Would you share a story like that with us?
I will. And it's funny. It takes me all the way back to my early days in Brattleboro when I was in my mid-20s. And I went to a weekend workshop, a weekend healing workshop. Somebody came to town and he was leading something called Life Institute. And it was people that I knew had been involved in it. And so I thought I would just go in. It was really one of the first kind of healing intensive kinds of things that I went to. And I was new, obviously. There were other people who had participated in before. And we had a Friday night introductory session. And then we would come back on Saturday. So I don't remember the details of the Friday night. But when we came back on Saturday, an older couple had chosen to not return. They didn't think it was for them. And what happened in the group, I can still kind of put myself back there and feel it. Both the leader of the group and under his leadership, other people were starting to put them down, and they were starting to say, they didn't have what it takes, or I don't remember the language, but the sense was, they weren't good enough to stay. And at that point, I really was not somebody who spoke up very much in group settings. I had to kind of learn that later. And it still doesn't come easy to me, but I just felt like I've got to say something. So I did. And I still remember kind of the feeling that made me speak up. And I remember saying something and not knowing how it would be received. It was received well, and the leader said, thank you. Thank you for questioning us, and you're right. Because I just said, they just decided that it wasn't right for them, and I don't think there's any reason that we should think less of them. Now I think to myself, it's good to know what is for you and what isn't for you. Yeah. So I have always felt good about that moment because I spoke up. And I do still feel the feeling of how difficult that was to do. And I was lucky enough to be well received. Yeah.
It's a powerful story, I'm thinking, because it has stayed with you all these years.
Yeah.
Like a doorway or something opened, or some threshold was reached or passed.
I think you're right. I mean, it certainly is the most memorable thing that happened to me in that whole experience, which was supposed to be a healing thing, and it was, but it is my strongest memory of that event.
A second thought comes to mind, where we're going to be speaking a lot about your work with the Brattleboro Women's Chorus, and the story that you began with is one of you finding your voice.
Yes, you're so right. And, it's funny, I hadn't thought of this in a long time either, but my friend Susan Kisslinger, who used to live here in Brattleboro, now she lives over on the seacoast, she did a program called Changing Harmonies, and she wrote a story for me called The Woman Who Found Her Voice. It was which I got to perform, and it was right around that time, I think. And so definitely finding my voice has definitely been a theme for me.
And so in friendship, she wrote something for you to perform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Was that singing and spoken word, or what was that?
The story itself was spoken word, but Susan's program, theater piece, really was all sorts of different songs. She and I collaborated a lot in my early days in Brattleboro. Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing like having a collaborative partner for artistic work.
Oh, it's so true.
Maybe let's hear more about that. Okay. What else can you tell us about your path?
Well, let's see. I started very young playing the piano, and we actually had an old pump organ in my family, and I was trying to compose on the pump organ. I can't even imagine how I was doing it, because I don't know how I could get my feet to do it. But anyway, I was trying to compose on that, and my parents ended up getting a piano, which was wonderful. And both my parents always supported my musicianship. And it actually became kind of an identification for me, you know, where I was the musician, which has, as you probably know, which has its ups and its downs about it. But
yeah,
because there were ways in which I could hide behind the piano as I went forward. But one nice thing was my mom sold World Book, and she had, there was this thing called a cyclo teacher, which was
sorry, do you remember what is that? What is World Book?
It was a individual learning kind of little machine. I mean, it wasn't, you wouldn't think of it as a machine now, but you would have a there was a course that you would put in, and then you would go click, click, and you could see the answer that you had put in, and you could see if you were right or you were wrong. It's kind of hard to describe. But my mom made up something about reading music, and so that, and she practiced it out on me to see if I could do it. And so what was great was I learned how to read music at the same time I learned how to read words.
Oh, lovely.
So it was really... That has given me a lot of gifts as a, being able to read has, as a pianist, meant that all the way through school, I could accompany choruses or theater programs, or I could just accompany anything because I could read well, read music well. So that was wonderful. But like, as I said, I ended up kind of hiding behind the piano it was too much of me in a way. And when I went off to college, I thought, no, I'm not going to be a music major because I want to do other things. And I don't want to only be a musician. And yet I found that without music in my life, my life didn't seem right. I did end up graduating from college with majoring in music and in English, even though I wasn't sure how I would make a living after that.
But what a great combination.
Yes. And it's just that I always, as a kid and straight along through, just loved stories and loved music. What got me to choral music, well, let me just say that what happened after college is I made one of the best decisions of my life, and I moved to Brattleboro.
Ah, good. So, where had you been before that?
I was I started out in Minnesota, and then moved to Connecticut with my family, and then I went to school in upstate New York at a college called Colgate University, and then I moved here to Brattleboro with some other friends from college whose idea it was. I was just kind of following along. I didn't know where I'd go. I just knew I wasn't going to go back to Fairfield County, Connecticut, which is where my parents lived at that time. So I knew I didn't want that. And landed in Brattleboro at a time when it was just if, you know, I hadn't felt like I belonged or was kind of normal in the places I'd lived since I pretty much since I left Minnesota, I would say, which was in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. But when I moved to Brattleboro, I just felt like, oh, my gosh, right away. Well, I should say after a year or so, yeah. I just found so much to do here that suited me perfectly. The folk music scene was thriving. Yeah. Chelsea House and Tony Barrand was here starting the Morris team. And there was Sacred Harp singing. Wow. I met my friends Peter and Mary Alice Amidon about a year into my stay here. And Peter and Mary Alice and I started to play on the streets of Brattleboro at Christmas time in the Christmas Street Band.
Oh, my goodness.
And from that, we went to the Brattleboro Brass Band, which Peter and I were in the which Peter founded, basically. But that was a wonderful group where we played for contra dances and mostly for contra dances. And we toured a little bit. Wonderful creative musicians. Mm-hmm. And there was a place called the Brattleboro Center for the Performing Arts, which was in where the church where Hotel Pharmacy is now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there I met my friend Carla Baldwin, and we did musicals together, which we did for probably 40 years or so. I haven't added it up, but I later on, Carla and I worked together at the Putney School. Uh-huh. So when I first moved here to Brattleboro, like, it was just a wealth of riches. And the Brattleboro Music School, Music Center, where I taught piano lessons. And I fell into teaching elementary school music, which suited me well because I love working with kids. And that was a pleasure. But after about 5 years or so, the thing I didn't have luck with here is I didn't have luck finding a partner. So I left for about 10 years and went to Portsmouth. And when I came back, I had a master's in education. Mm-hmm. I was making my living at that point as a storyteller.
Oh.
And I came back with my husband, Tim, and my daughter, Sarah, and then Jacob joined us later.
Oh, so a place where you had come to and you knew that it could be a home for you all.
Yeah. Uh-huh. As long as I was away from here, I missed the kind of community music making that happens in Brattleboro. And I know that I was starting to find that where I was as well, but it had come so easily here. Mm-hmm. It was that kind of community.
And when did you first come to Brattleboro? What year was that?
1977.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It also sounds like it wasn't altogether already in place, but you were also a part of creating new things together.
Yeah, yeah. And part of it was just meeting those particular people, you know, part of it was such a arts welcoming, thriving community. It was just so many people here making art in different ways.
And in reflection now, why do you think that was so? Why Brattleboro?
Friends of Music at Guildford comes to my mind as, and also maybe let's say the Brattleboro Music Center. But there was something about, I don't know what it was really about that time. It seemed like I felt as an artist and as a young person, I felt that I was welcome. I felt my energy, my enthusiasm, my skills, I felt very welcomed here. And I don't know what other people did to make that happen, but it just felt like such a welcoming place.
You've chosen a lovely song for us to listen to today, and this is a song that is very important to you. Why don't we listen to Japanese Bowl by Peter Mayer? it's a performance of you singing it, mm-hmm. and then we'll come back and have a conversation about it.
Great.
Was Japanese Bowl by Peter Mayer, sung by Becky Graeber at her one-woman show, Let's Fall in Love, in the fall of 2018. Becky was accompanied by Alki Stereopoulos on piano. My name is Teresa Healy. We're all in this together. And today I'm having a conversation with Becky Graeber, director of Brattleboro Women's Chorus. Becky, maybe you could tell us about that beautiful song.
Well, I just love the idea that the things that have gone wrong and gone right, and your experience and every bit of who you are is able to shine out as gold, as the, mm-hmm. that the cracks are filled with gold. I love that as I become one of the older people in my field, which is it's just so unusual to suddenly turn around and there you are being one of the older people rather than yeah. as I'm so used to being like one of the youngest ones.
Well, I'd love to hear more about how you came to start the Brattleboro Women's Chorus. But before we get into that part of our conversation, let's hear one of the songs from the chorus. What would you suggest?
Well, there is a song that I love it's a little bit about choosing and being chosen for the work that you do. The words to it, so it's called Clearing, and some of the words that inspired me to write the music are, do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it, only then will you know how to give yourself to this world, so worthy of rescue.
That was a performance by Brattleboro Women's Chorus of Clearing, a poem by Martha Postlethwaite, set to music by Becky Graeber. I'm Teresa Healy. We're all in this together, and today I'm speaking with Becky Graeber, storyteller, musician, and director of the Brattleboro Women's Chorus. So, Becky, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how and why you started the chorus. How did that all come to be?
Well, let's see. I had been making my living as a traveling storyteller when I lived over on the seacoast of New Hampshire. And I moved back to Brattleboro and kind of shifted back into music. As a storyteller even, I always did both. But when I had my second child, Jacob, and I already had Sarah, traveling around, much as I had liked it earlier, traveling around didn't work as the way mm-hmm. to make a living. And I did need to contribute to the family finances. So I just started to think about what could I do that I would be staying in one place, Brattleboro, and make connections, have relationships with people. Because I also found that moving back here, wonderful as Brattleboro was, you know, I'd been gone for 10 years and I couldn't just plug right back in to what I'd done and who I'd known before. So I had a couple of friends who were already leading choruses, and they both encouraged me. And so did my friend Susan Dedell, who led the community chorus here. Why don't you lead a chorus? Because that's the kind of thing I'd been good at and had been doing for so long. I also had attended workshops with Issei Barnwell, and she taught a workshop at Omega Institute and other places called Singing in the African American Tradition. Mm-hmm. And the way she taught was totally by ear. No words in front of you, no recordings, nothing, just you and your voice. And I loved it. And I really, and it was unusual at the time in a way. It was different because choruses were usually, you know, get the music, learn the music from a written page. And I just loved the carrying forward the oral tradition. So I started the women's chorus. I started it in the fall of 1996. And my husband, Tim, was the director of Kids Place at the time. And so we had our first meeting in the basement of Kids Place. And I had just sent out an email. No, not an email. I think I sent out postcards to people. I think I'm dating myself. It wasn't an email. My friend Mary Alice Amadon had been teaching a class for women, and she was done doing that. So I sent out either a letter or a postcard to people on her mailing list and then a few other friends that I had who I thought might be interested. And I thought I'd get, I don't know, 10 or 15 people. But that first night, I think it was the first night we had something like 30 women came.
Oh, how wonderful.
It was amazing. And by the end of that semester, we moved to rehearse at Oak Grove School. We had something like 60 women by the end of the semester.
Goodness.
They kept joining. It was amazing. It just was kind of like, you know, it was the right place, the right time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Was there something about the fact that women wanted a place to gather as women?
Yes, I think so. A place to gather and a place to come together over doing something together.
Yeah.
Not just to process or talk. I think women can be fairly good at talking with each other one-on-one or something, but a group, they wanted a groupness that was about the energy of it, I think, and the music of it. Yeah. It was wonderful.
Something creative.
Something creative. Well said. Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 Something expressive, something creative. And even at that very beginning, there were girls as well. There were mothers and daughters that came, which was lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even so, starting right then, girls, and I think after a while it became over the age of 10, have always been welcome. And that's been a sweet part of chorus. Anyone who identifies as a woman or as non-binary, and who can comfortably sing the A above middle C. So we do have a kind of a musical request in there.
So what's the format of it all?
For a long time, the format was rehearsals on Wednesday nights in a kind of a semester schedule. So, and I think in part, I was still tied in with the school schedule myself and fitting other work around this work. But we would start in September, and then we'd always have a concert after the first year when we had an ice storm on our concert. We've always had a concert the weekend before Thanksgiving. And then our second semester begins in, now it's early March, and then we have another, a second concert on Mother's Day.
Oh, lovely.
So that's been the routine for years. Now, in the middle time, in the January, February slot, I've done different things. Sometimes in the early days of doing something during that time, I picked actually more challenging music, and sometimes music that that I couldn't really teach completely by ear. Mm-hmm. So both to build those skills in people who wanted to build those skills, and also mm-hmm. to keep it interesting for myself to because there was music I felt I couldn't really do that I loved. Mm-hmm. So we did some of that in that slot. And then we also did Singing Valentines, and that was really a pleasure. That was something where smaller groups, I would organize. We would rehearse in a large group, but then we would organize quartets or trios to travel around. And as a fundraiser for chorus, people would buy Singing Valentines, and women dressed in red and pink would show up at their door and sing a Singing Valentine. That was fun. And again, it was a different variety of music.
what a great idea.
Yeah, it was fun. The first year we did that as well, we got snowed out. So we had it all prepared and everything, and then we couldn't do it. But there was something, I don't know, there was something kind of great about that, because we still had all that fun of singing together.
Yeah.
And and that always has been equally important to me as the concert. That kind of having the rehearsals be a pleasure and uplifting for people is very important to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And how did you choose the music in general? Like, that's a lot of music every year, year after year.
It is. And it's been one of the great pleasures of it. I love that part. I don't know. I was probably, you should talk with me in late August and ask me how I feel, because probably I do have times when I'm like, what am I going to do? But most of the time, music comes to me, and people send it to me, or I'm able to find music that just seems right for the group. I've always had other friends who also lead women's choruses and also teach them in a similar kind of way by ear. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a group of six of us now that get together every summer. And this past year we did it on Zoom and share songs and say, here's one I found. And that's been really wonderful.
Oh, there's so many layers of community that you're building.
That's true. That's true.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, you and the chorus produced in 2015 a CD celebrating the first 20 years of your work in the chorus.
Yes.
And there's a song there, Oh, the Comfort, that maybe we could listen to. There's an awful lot of wonderful songs on that CD.
Let's
listen to Oh, the Comfort. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that song before we hear it.
Well, one thing I'll tell you is that the group that's performing it started off as a Singing Valentines group. So they just had so much fun together, and they sounded so beautiful together. And this is a song that I wrote for a smaller ensemble. I didn't feel it would work for the whole chorus. Yeah. So it features my daughter, Sarah Ellis, and Betsy Williams, Muriel Taylor, and Jesse DeVries.
Lovely. Let's hear Oh, the Comfort. It's a song based on a poem by Diana Maria Mulock Craik from the late 19th century and set to music by Becky Graeber.
Oh, the comfort, comfort, I feel in faith with you. Did I know?
Becky, you know, we're at the end of a year like no other. None of us has ever lived through a year like this. And it's at the same time as you're celebrating again another anniversary, 25th anniversary of being with the Brattleboro Women's Chorus. What are you learning, Becky, about community building through all of this?
I feel as though one of the most primary things about community building is, as a leader, to make sure people know they are welcome. My work has been to let myself be vulnerable, let myself be open, let myself be accepting and welcoming of new ideas, ideas that I don't have.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because through that process, you're also developing the unity of the voices in the chorus. You're creating a whole out of a lot of difference, and that must not be an easy thing. Mm. How does that work in a chorus?
Well, let's see. I mean, the other side of singing is listening. As a musical director, I can help be the ears of and help to develop the ears. In a chorus, you come into it in a very tangible way, and that is, can I hear myself and hear the voice on either side of me? Can I, we don't have auditions in our chorus, and there's some people with less experience than others. And so there are all different kinds of voices. And sometimes people are thrown off by someone who's singing near them, who's not right on the pitch as they understand it. So there is really a lot to work out in that kind of way. So for me, it's just a question of, sometimes I work individually with people who might need a little extra support or help. At other times, I'm just working to encourage listening and giving some tips on how you listen to yourself and to others. Now, this is an aspect that at this time in Zoom land, we don't have this issue, right? It's a live choral issue, but it's not. And at this Zoom time, one of the benefits of it, I think, is that people are, number one, able to sing freely with abandon without worry and get better acquainted with their own voices. And it's kind of fun. And you can see each other. Our mouths, you look like you're not necessarily singing at the exact same time either.
No.
So it's comical in some ways, but there are ways to have fun with it. And we have discovered some of them. For example, you can do hand signs or things with your hands. The dance part of it can be quite fun and something you never would think to do in a regular rehearsal. But when you're just in those little rectangles, you have to make it fun somehow.
Yeah.
And it is, actually.
There's choreography.
Right.
You know, I'm gonna put you on the spot here for a minute, because in your email tagline, you have a beautiful quotation. And I'm wondering if you could recall that.
So it says, in these days of political, personal, and economic disintegration, music is not a luxury, it's a necessity. Not simply because it is therapeutic, nor because it is the universal language, but because it is the persistent focus of our intelligence, aspiration, and goodwill. And that was Robert Shaw who said that.
Ah, beautiful.
Yeah, very profound words. I don't think I could do any better than that.
Becky Graeber, thank you so much for this conversation today. At the end of the year, and for the gift of music that you bring to us all.
Teresa, thank you so much for today and for this whole year. Thank you so much.